Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Jeffers Brief. I'm your host, John Jeffers, founder, executive producer, an all-around good guy on the Contra Radio Network, which you can find on podbean.com. We're also going to be broadcast on KYAH and out of Delta, Utah, 540 AM. So give a listen. We're glad you're listening. We got a lot of stories to do tonight, so let's get with it. First one we want to talk about, and I know you're tired of hearing about it, and I'm tired of talking about it, but we have to. The shutdown and the reopening of government, I'm going to say this, and then we're going to move on. And that is this. Look, so government reopens for 3 weeks. Basically, right now, the Democrats are all shouting how Nancy won, the Democrats won. I don't think so. You see, the Democrats aren't looking down the long term. At least not on this fight. Because it's only going to be open for like 3 weeks. That's as much as they funded it. My guess is that Trump has laid the groundwork. While I reopen government, we're supposed to negotiate on the wall. And the Democrats will refuse to do that because they think they're going to win. Well, history says, according to Dobbs, is that since 1986, the Democrats have never kept their word on immigration reform. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, we'll see. And as for the federal employees, they'll get their paychecks sometime around the middle of next week, from what I understand. All right. And that's all I'm going to say about it. What else we got? Oh, yeah, okay. We got to talk. This is from Sundance over at the Big Ugly. And basically, we have a tripwire. Chairman Adam Schiff sends the House Intel witness transcripts to Robert Mueller, but does not release them publicly. So this is a key tell, and completely irreconcilable by those who work for Epoch Times news organization, who continually claim that Rod Rosensnake and Robert Mueller are working earnestly toward the cause of justice. Last September 2018, the House Intel Republican Chairman Devin Nunes asked the DOJ to review for declassification purposes all witness transcripts and release them to the public. However, DOJ and FBI refused to release the transcripts. 3 months later, December 2018, the Joint Oversight and Judiciary Committee also requested their witness transcripts from their committee be released. Both requests were denied. Today, instead of supporting a public release, the new Democrat House Intel Chairman, Adam Schiff, he's one strange dude, man, I'm telling you, that's just my opinion, announces he will send Robert Mueller all the witness transcripts. So from Reuters is reporting this: the House Intelligence Committee will release all transcripts of interviews in its probe of Russian election interference to the special counsel's office, its Democratic chairman said on Friday, after Roger Stone, a longtime ally of President Donald Trump, was charged with lying to Congress. Now, we are going to, you know what, before we continue with this, I've got Alan Dershowitz, 11 minutes, and he discusses in the best possible terms about this alleged collusion. You're going to love it. And this whole thing about Stone being indicted. Look, yes, Dershowitz is a committed liberal, but he's an honest liberal, and he knows what he's talking about. So when he talks, I have a tendency to listen to what the man has to say. Now, let's get back to it. This is now the second witness who has been indicted for or pled guilty to making false statements in testimony before a committee, Representative Adam Schiff said in a statement. The first order of business for the committee will be to release all remaining transcripts to the special counsel's office, and we will continue to follow the facts wherever they lead. I should say, wherever they lead, in parentheses, but not to Hillary. We won't follow that lead. Schiff and Elijah Cummings, the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, said on Wednesday they expect Trump's longtime personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, to testify before both panels, despite his decision to postpone his February 7th appearance, citing threats against his family from Trump. Does that sound absolutely preposterous and ludicrous to you? It does to me. Let's rephrase this. I'm not going to show up and testify because Trump is threatening my family. Really? This is just crazy. However, Chairman Adam Schiff said they understood Cohen's security concerns, but added in a statement, "This will not stop us from getting to the truth. We expect Mr. Cohen to appear before both committees, and we remain engaged with his counsel about his upcoming appearances." Now, two key aspects here. First, as we can see from the Roger Stone arrest indictment, the special counsel team is already using the transcripts. A, they obviously have them because they outlined the Roger Stone testimony in their indictment, and B, the transcripts that Devin Nunes submitted in September includes the testimony that Team Mueller used. So let's watch the play here. Cunning Schiff is essentially diffusing a background question about how Mueller is able to exploit transcripts that were given to Rod Rosensnake by Devin Nunes when he asked the DOJ to conduct a declassification review. Notice, no one in the media asked this question because it would show the uncomfortable synergy between Rosensnake and Mueller. This is the relationship that Team Epoch obfuscates. In other words, they will never acknowledge it. Second, and most importantly, if the Epoch Times narrative toward the Mueller-Rosensnake were true, it's not, then Adam Schiff would be acting against his political interests by giving transcripts to an honorable Robert Mueller and Rod Rosensnake. The opposite is true. Chairman Schiff is giving the transcript to Robert Mueller because it is in his political interest to do so. Now, Chairman Adam Schiff, a notoriously slimy and conniving politician, is using Mueller for the purpose we have always outlined Mueller to hold. Specifically, bullet point number 3, we will talk about shortly. Number 1, creating an investigation. Just by creating the investigation, it is then used as a shield by any corrupt FBI DOJ official who would find himself or herself under downstream congressional investigation. Former officials being deposed or questioned by IG Horowitz or Congress could then say they are unable to answer those questions due to an ongoing special counsel investigation. In this way, Mueller provides cover for the ideologically aligned deep state officials. Number 2. Use the investigation to keep any and all inquiry focus away from the corrupt DOJ-FBI activity that took place in 2015, 2016, and 2017. Keep the media narrative looking somewhere, anywhere, other than directly at the epicenter of the issues. In this way, Mueller provides distraction and talking points against the Trump administration. And here you go, bullet point number 3. Use the investigation to suck up, absorb, any damaging investigative material that might surface as a result of tangentially related inquiry. For example, control the exposure of evidence against classified leak participants like SSCI Director of Security James Wolfe, and or block IG Horowitz from seeing material related to the FISA abuse scandal and Spygate. In this way, Mueller provides cover for the institutions and the administrative state. Again, to repeat, frustratingly, there are those claiming to be on our side who are oblivious to these political constructs. They are either intentionally trying to distract from the real danger that is heading toward President Trump, or they are brutally naive people watching things unfold while having no actual grasp of what forces opposes them. Now, there is a very real danger here as the Epoch Times community keeps selling the trust the plan pitches and perspectives of Honorable Rod Rosensnake and Robert Mueller, while completely ignoring the reality of what is taking place. This is smash-mouth politics on steroids. Yes, DAG Rod Rosensnake had to give Mueller approval and authorization to conduct a pre-dawn FBI raid with full Bin Laden optics and narratives therein, and no, obviously Rosensnake didn't anticipate any pushback from the AAG Matthew Whitaker for his approvals. You can make up your own mind on what that says about AAG Whitaker, Acting Attorney General Whitaker. Note, if you want to argue the Jeff Carlson premise that Whitaker is now primarily the decision maker in the Mueller probe, which he isn't, well, that early morning FBI raid doesn't provide a very optimistic viewpoint of Mr. Whitaker, does it? Anyways, get back to it. Pelosi, Schiff, Cummings, and Nadler are working with Robert Mueller team and Rod Rosensnake, the internal DOJ corrupt officials, on a very carefully constructed plan toward the goal of an impeachment vote against the sitting president. Mueller, the political team, not the individual, are providing their political allies with the ammunition toward their goal. Mueller is both the shield and the sword in the arsenal. Mueller hiding, controlling, and then shaping released aspects of the witness testimony that provide maximum political value exhibit his team coordination. Unfortunately, too many people on all sides still refuse to believe the institutions of the DOJ and FBI are comprehensively corrupted. False hope affords too many people the ability to cling to a belief that Rosensnake and Mueller are working honorably toward the cause of justice. They're not. Hopefully, the Schiff transcript announcement today helps people see exactly what is happening. So until people awaken to the reality that all elements within executive institutions of the DOJ and FBI, past and current, aligned with corrupt political elements in the House and Senate, are infected with the metastasized cancer of politics, little will change. Yeah? Agree with that? What else do we have here? Let me see. What else might you need to know here? Yes. What are we looking here? The committee oversight plans. Now here's a little section of it that says, finally, the Committee on Oversight and Reform, in consultation with House leadership of both parties, is required to submit the oversight plans to the House by April 15th on the first session of a Congress with any recommendation it has for effective coordination of oversight plans. So right now they're telling you, those are the new rules for it. Now the oversight over the Executive Office of the President, which is subsection K, clarifies the Committee on Oversight Reform's existing special oversight authority over all operations of government. So, on January 24th, which was yesterday, Representative Elijah Cummings, the chairman of the Committee on Oversight and Reform, issued the following statement in response to breaking news that a supervisor overruled two career officials who recommended against granting Jared Kushner a top secret security clearance based on foreign influence concerns. He says, yesterday, I launched a wide-range investigation of the White House's security clearance process based on a series of grave breaches over the past 2 years. My request letter to the White House explicitly covers Mr. Kushner, and we expect the White House to produce all the documents and interviews we requested to determine if tonight's breaking story is accurate. The system is supposed to be a nonpartisan determination of an individual's fitness to hold a clearance, not an ad hoc approach that overrules career experts to give the president's family members access to our nation's most sensitive secrets. I guess my question for Mr. Cummings would be, have you paid your taxes yet, you freaking leech? You know, that guy's been feeding at the public trough for decades. Decades. There's a whole bunch of them. You know what you call a bunch of pigs? You call them a passel. And right now, there's a passel of pigs in the Congress who've been feeding at the public trough for way too long. They think they're above everyone else. Stuff that you and I do, oh, we'd be called on the carpet for. But the passel of pigs sit, you know, munching and drinking and eating all they can out of the public trough, well, they're okay. Which gives rise to my typical unhappiness with the entire Congress. I just can't stand them anymore. Incredible. No, I told you we were going to talk about Alan Dershowitz, right? Before we do that, we got to get some more Sundance here. Now, Nunes outlines the central point of the media working with the House leadership toward a Trump impeachment strategy. And you're wondering, you know, what does that mean? What's he talking about? What I'm talking about is this. House Intelligence Committee ranking member Nunes, he appears on Fox News and focuses attention to the primary point most overlooked. The BuzzFeed narrative on Michael Cohen is directly connected to the political endeavors of Democrats in Congress. Now follow me here. BuzzFeed pushes a false conspiracy involving President Trump and Michael Cohen. Chairman Adam Schiff then outlines his intent to, you know, investigate that claim through the use of the committee. Again, not meaning to be too repetitious, but this is coordinated. Nothing is happenstance. Resistance allies within Congress are working in concert with resistance allies in media and lawfare to create the baseline for the impeachment agenda. Speaker Pelosi publishes new rules for Democratic committees. The new rules tell Elijah Cummings to target the White House. The Thursday after the Super Bowl, February 7th, Michael Cohen will testify publicly to Cummings' House Oversight Committee. The script for the questions have already been written. The goal of the hearing will be to create the baseline for Schiff and Judiciary Chairman Nadler to move to the next phase, a subpoena for Donald Trump Jr. Remember, everything is pre-planned, pre-scripted, and building to a specific focus point. This is why BuzzFeed must hold the position not to retract their claim. The Pelosi, Cummings, Schiff, and Nadler plan requires their media allies to stick to the script. There can be no modification. Remember, everything is planned, everything is sequential. After the Cohen testimony, while Schiff begins to target Donald Trump Jr., Robert Mueller will move in with an interim report on the Russian investigation. Mark my words on this, people. Sundance is usually right on the money with this stuff. So mid-February will be reserved for Schiff to target Trump Jr. Then, the timing for Rod Rosensnake and Robert Mueller is likely late February to expand. The ultimate impeachment ball will be handed to Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler after the April 15th, 2019, per the Pelosi rules and schedule. The wild card is AG nominee William Barr. Now, unlike Rod Rosensnake, Robert Mueller, Chris Wray, who is the absolutely most useless FBI director probably in the history of that organization, and David Bodick, William Barr doesn't appear to be part of the compliant organization, specifically because Barr is not participating in the team agenda. Doesn't seem like it so far. He becomes a risk they need to isolate and marginalize. So, what we have is this. Meanwhile, the New York Post says, you know, Trump threatens to declassify devastating docs about the Democrats. That's from the New York Post. But that was on November 28th. We've seen this already. We've heard this many times. So the question then becomes, really, if they go down the presidential harassment track, if they want go and harass the president and the administration, I think that would be the best thing that would happen to me. This is President Trump. He says, I'm a counterpuncher, and I will hit them so hard they've never been hit like that. He said during a 36-minute Oval Office sit-down. The commander-in-chief said he could declassify FISA warrant applications and other documents from Robert Mueller's probe, and predicted the disclosure would expose the FBI, Justice Department, and the Clinton campaign as being in cahoots to set him up. Well, we know that. I think that would help my campaign. If they want to play tough, I will do it. They will see how devastating those pages are. But Trump told the Post he wanted to save the documents until they were needed, i.e., I've got this bullet. I'm telling you, I've got the bullet, and I just haven't decided whether to pull the trigger on that bullet. That's the message he's sending out. But Trump told the Post he wanted to save the documents until they were needed. Again, I haven't pulled the trigger yet, but I can. It's much more powerful if I do it then, Trump said, because if we had done it already, it would already be yesterday's news. So Trump revealed his playbook just as Democrats are set to take over the House committees in January, where they are poised to investigate his potential business conflicts of interest, tax returns, Russia dealings, and more. You know what? Make a note of this, people. Presidential candidates do not have to release their tax returns. They don't. There's no law that says he has to. Now, we're talking about the Stone mess. The Stone indictment today, the arrest, which, by the way, was ridiculous. So I just can't stand it. But anyways, I want you to listen to Alan Dershowitz, Harvard Law Professor Emeritus. You ready? This is about 11 minutes. And it's worth it for you to listen. You want to catch what's really going on in this mess. He really puts it succinctly, and it makes it easier for everybody to understand it. So in about 11 minutes, you get a real feel for what's happening. You get an idea of what's going on with it, and that's really important. So, this was taken from Fox News. When was this taken? Had to be this morning. All right, check it out. Listen up.
Harvard Law Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz wrote the book, The Case Against Impeaching President Trump. How are you, sir? Good day to you, and thank you for being here today. Tell us what it means based on what your understanding so far.
Well, I've read the indictment, and it's a typical Mueller indictment. Very, very heavy on stories involving collusion and WikiLeaks. But the indictment itself all relates to obstruction of justice, tampering of witnesses. In other words, crimes that occurred as a result of the investigation. This is typical of Mueller. He has found almost no crimes that occurred before he was appointed special counsel. He was appointed special counsel to uncover crimes that had already occurred. He has virtually failed in that respect in every regard. Almost all of his crimes that he's indicted people for are crimes that resulted from his investigation. False statements, tampering with witnesses, obstruction of justice. I went through today the list of all the people who had been indicted by Mueller, and it was very hard to find any American who had been charged with any crime that occurred before Mueller was appointed special counsel. So what's happened here is these are crimes that are generated by the investigation. It doesn't make them any less criminal, but it really means that there's been a failure to uncover the basic crimes for which he was appointed. Namely, before he was appointed, was there illegal collusion, illegal conspiracy with Russia? We don't find that. In this indictment, he tells stories about alleged collusion, stories about WikiLeaks, but that's not the basis for the indictment. The basis for the indictment are all events that occurred after he was appointed. That's very significant.
All right, Professor, the president's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, just spoke to the Washington Post, and they asked the what was the president's reaction to this, what he learned about Roger Stone's happened at his house this morning. He said he wouldn't comment specifically on the president's reaction, but he did say the president said he's not nervous about the Stone indictment. Should the president in any way be nervous about this?
There are two reasons why somebody might be nervous. Number one, whether he is implicated in the indictment himself. The answer to that is clearly no. The second is whether or not Stone has been indicted in order to squeeze him into testifying. As Judge Ellis, who presided over the Manafort case, said, the object of these arrests is not to get people like Manafort or people like Stone. It's to get them to sing and perhaps even to compose, to create guilt allegations against the real target here, the president. So the president should be worried every time somebody who he knew or had any acquaintance with is arrested, because according to Judge Ellis, the purpose of these arrests is not to get that person, but to get that person to provide information or testimony against the real target, the president. That's the tactic Mueller has used from day one. As a civil libertarian, it's a very disturbing tactic. It's all too common among prosecutors, but it's very disturbing. What prosecutors do all the time is they threaten people. They say, if you don't testify, we're going to put you in jail, your family in jail. Now, people object to the fact that Trump and Giuliani made alleged threats against Cohen's family, and that's wrong if that happened. But it's also wrong when prosecutors do the same thing. Prosecutors tamper with witnesses all the time. The difference is it's legal for a prosecutor to threaten somebody that unless they become a witness and testify according to what the prosecution wants them to testify, they will prosecute them, their relatives, their friends, and their associates. It's a double standard of injustice.
Let's go through a couple things here that's just available over the last 2 hours. First of all, Sarah Sanders, she was on CNN earlier today and responded this way to the initial arrest.
Look, my first reaction is real simple. This has nothing to do with the president and certainly nothing to do with the White House. Mm-hmm. This is something that has to do solely with that individual and not something that affects us here in this building.
Okay, so that was from this morning. I want to take you back 2 days now. Roger Stone was on with Tucker, and part of his commentary went like this at the end. Watch.
You have a runaway special prosecutor who is accountable to no one. The House Intelligence Committee Democrats keep insisting that I have perjured myself. That's a lie. My testimony is both accurate and truthful, but I'm not even allowed to have a copy of it.
So let's see what comes of that at 11 a.m. But the first part of that statement, you have a runaway special prosecutor. Just listening to you talk, I think that's what you believe. And now you remember when Manafort was arrested at 5 o'clock in the morning, he and his wife were in bed? You remember the reporting on that? Well, this morning, guns drawn on behalf of the FBI, 6 a.m. Local time, and apparently there was a TV crew of some type that was there as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that happens, but just put that together. When you're making the case that these are process crimes, but yet they're being arrested in
these
a very
heavy-handed
way. Go.
Of course, normally the situation is you call the lawyer, you tell the lawyer, look, he's been indicted. Please show up at the federal court tomorrow at 10 o'clock, and maybe they keep an eye on him to make sure he doesn't run away. But in cases like this, you don't typically see arrests of this kind. Look, Rudy Giuliani himself is guilty of having done that. You remember the case back when he went after Goldman Sachs executive and had him handcuffed and arrested in the Goldman Sachs office, and then it turned out there was no case to be brought against him. So this is something that prosecutors do a lot in order to intimidate witnesses. When they want to get people to testify, they're very heavy-handed, and they make the point very clearly, this is not about you. You can save yourself, your family, your friends. Just give us what we want to hear about the president. That's why the president always has to be a little nervous, even though these are not allegations relating to him. It's against a person who may have information relating to him. Stone doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to easily cooperate, but look, when you're facing long prison term, the most loyal of people turn to themselves and say, I have to look out for myself first.
That makes this tweet very important then. This goes back to December 3rd, 2018, Professor, in which the president tweeted out, quote, quoting Roger Stone, I will never testify against Trump. The president went on to write, this statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not be forced by a rogue and out-of-control prosecutor to make up lies and stories about President Trump. Nice to know that some people still have guts. How will those words play out?
Well, well, you know, they're going to allege that that's obstruction of justice, that he's tampering with a witness, telling the witness not to testify, encouraging him not to testify. That's a very, very weak charge. You don't obstruct justice in public by sending out tweets. But look, Cohn said he would never testify against Trump. He would take a bullet for him. And now look what's happened. So you never know what's going to happen when a person is arrested for a myriad of crimes, as you described it, process crimes. Those are serious crimes. But when you look at the scorecard of how many crimes this special prosecutor hasn't covered against Americans that occurred before he was appointed and that relate to the Russia probe, you really have to say it's been a very disappointing investigation. If the best you can do is essentially create crimes by your investigation, which is what has happened here, that doesn't exculpate the people who have really lied or really obstructed justice, but it tells you something important about the investigation itself.
Okay, some people believe with this action against Stone that Mueller's closer to the end. Are you in that school or do you know?
We don't know. We know he's convened or extended grand juries. One would hope
another
he would be closer
months
to the end. We know he was waiting for the election and that's over. And I would expect that before the summer, we would see an end. And again, I would hope, in fairness, that when his report is completed, the new attorney general, hopefully you'll be sworn in by then, Barr, will look at the report, give a copy to Giuliani and the rest of the Trump team, say, now you have a chance to rebut that. And we'll simultaneously produce the two reports so the American public can see what the prosecution has to say and what the defense has to say and make up its own mind as to who's right. That's only fair.
What do you expect to happen or go down in this federal courtroom?
Oh, it's going to be just technical. They're going to ask him if he pleads not guilty. He's going to say he pleads not guilty. He doesn't need a lawyer appointed. He had his own lawyer. Bail will be given. It'd be interesting what the prosecution asks for in terms of bail, or whether they ask for a remand, because if they arrested him, they must think or claim to think that he's a danger of flight or something else. So it would be the only interesting thing we'll see, what approach the prosecutor has toward his remaining at liberty, yeah, pending the rest of the case. We saw Manafort was ultimately remanded as a result of alleged misconduct while he was out on bail. So that's the important thing to look to.
We've got to run up, but we've got 100 more questions, and apologize, we're out of time here. But again, the indictment says that he was in touch with WikiLeaks and not the Russians. That's quite clear. Do you know?
It doesn't allege it. It doesn't allege it. That's not the crime. That's part of the story. That's the important thing.
Interesting.
It's part of the story. That's not alleged as a crime. So it doesn't have to be proved at trial. It's like just writing something, scribbling something on the wall of a bathroom, accusing somebody of something. There's no opportunity to rebut that because it's not charged as a crime.
Okay,
that's
so
important. The storytelling part of this is just storytelling.
I just want to get this last question. Stone's been saying for 2 years that he's likely to be indicted. Why does it take 2.5 years to get to this point? How come?
Well, there may have been a sealed indictment for a while. We don't know the answer to that question, but they were probably trying to build up the case. And they didn't want a one count or a two count. They wanted, you know, a seven count indictment. So it takes some time to do that. And maybe they were negotiating behind the scenes. We don't know that. There's no evidence of that. But that sometimes happens and negotiations break down. So the indictment comes forward.
Thank you, sir.
But
it's good to have you on today.
We
look
very hard at this indictment and distinguish between the crimes and the stories.
Alan Dershowitz, thank you, live in Florida today. Thank you, sir. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Professor.
Harvard Law Professor.
All right, there you go. Pretty interesting stuff. Does it kind of clear things up? Does it put things in perspective for you so that the mainstream media will not do? because the MSM will listen to the stories and ignore really what the crime, alleged crime, is. So that's why we played that. And again, I think Professor Dershowitz does a very good job in explaining things in layman's terms that we all understand. So for Professor Dershowitz, I give this to you. Well, I do. All right. In the meantime, let's talk. This is from the American Spectator. Who wrote this? It's really good stuff. David Catron. It's entitled Pelosi and the Caucus of Crazy. And, you know, watching that goofy Nancy Pelosi tonight, it's like, you know, she is just off on her own planet. And she has a lot of followers who should be, put in the asylum with them. But anyways, David Catron wrote a really good article. I want to share it with you. It says, once again, the Dems confirm they can't govern. Less than a month after regaining their majority in the House of Representatives, the Democrats have already demonstrated why they can no longer be trusted with power. They are so enthralled to their special interest financiers and extremist base, they can't accept a compromise favored by 70% of the voters on the government shutdown. Pelosi's arbitrary dismissal of President Trump's latest offer as a non-starter is not merely unreasonable, it does genuine harm to millions of her own party's most loyal constituents. Even the Washington Post editorial board urged her to take the deal. They wrote, unquestionably a deal would contain galling elements for both sides. That's the nature of compromise. But a measure of statesmanship for a member of Congress now is the ability to accept some disappointments and shrug off the inevitable attacks from the purist, if it means rescuing the lives of thousands of deserving people living among us. Yeah? You with me? So Pelosi's predecessors, the legendary Democratic Speaker Tip O'Neill, for example, would have grabbed Trump's compromise offer, loudly declared victory, and proceeded to run like hell. But the caucus, over which Nancy Pelosi presides today, has far more in common with the Bloomingdale Lunatic Asylum than any viable political party. Her response to President Trump's offer has been to cancel the State of the Union address in an attempt to prevent the American people from hearing about the proposal directly from him, unfiltered by the news media. In a letter dated Wednesday, she wrote the following. When I extended an invitation on January 3rd for you to deliver the State of the Union address, there was no thought that the government would still be shut down. I am writing to inform you that the House of Representatives will not consider a concurrent resolution authorizing the President's State of the Union address in the House chamber until the government has opened. Pelosi's letter suggests that she is suffering from senile dementia. Not an impossibility, considering that she often claims to have astral encounters with Susan B. Anthony. Her original State of the Union invitation was sent 2 weeks after the shutdown began. Then on January 16th, she claimed she was going to cancel it for security concerns. That was shown to be fiction. Now she seems to believe that refusing to hold the State of the Union in the House is somehow going to stop the President's message from getting out. This is, well, nuts. Here is the part of Trump's response that speaks to the deteriorating condition of the Democratic Party. He says, I'm not surprised. It's really a shame what's happening with the Democrats. They've become radicalized. Indeed, they have. And if you want to know how crazy it's getting, consider that earlier this week, the Democratic Steering Committee just assigned Representative Alexandria, we're all gonna die, Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida, impeach the MF-er, Tlaib, and Ayanna, Trump is a racist, Presley, to the powerful House Oversight and Reform Committee. It's little wonder that Michael Cohen, President Trump's former lawyer, decided to cancel his scheduled appointment before this wacky crew. Cohen was to have appeared in February, but his attorney notified Elijah Cummings that Cohn would not be there. Cohn's attorney, the erstwhile Clinton bag man Lanny Davis, said the cancellation of his client's testimony involving, quote, ongoing threats against his family from President Trump and Rudy Giuliani, end quote. It goes without saying that Davis failed to specify a single scrap of evidence to support this preposterous claim. Cohn has told so many lies to so many people, he's probably trying to avoid yet another perjury charge. Being Jewish, however, he may also be uncomfortable being interrogated by the Representative Tlaib, who has already been called out for tweeting anti-Semitic remarks about members who voted against a bill relating to Israel. They forgot what country they represent. This is the U.S. where boycotting is a right and part of our historical fight for freedom and equality. Maybe a refresher course on our U.S. Constitution is in order, then get back to open up our government instead of taking our rights away. Nor is Tlaib the only anti-Semite to be welcomed into the increasingly demented Democratic fold. Commentary reports that freshman Democratic Representative Ilhan Omar once tweeted, "Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel." She has claimed that this was just youthful naivete. Right. And this kind of crazy is by no means limited to first-termers like Ocasio-Cortez, Tlaib, Presley, and Omar. The ignorant and bigoted remarks of those weird sisters will be written off by their progressive defenders to inexperience. But that won't work for everyone afflicted with left-wing logoria. House Democratic Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries, a three-term congressman from New York, celebrated the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. by launching into a tirade in which he compared President Trump to a leader of the Ku Klux Klan. One would think that Representative Jeffries would consider the KKK's well-documented ties to his own party avoid such analogies. The famous Ku Klux Klan official to serve in Congress was Democratic Senator Robert Byrd of West Virginia, whose tenure lasted 57 years, from 1953 to 2010. Yet Jeffries talked about a guy from Queens, New York, and he said this: "These are challenging times in the United States of America. We have a hater in the White House, a birther in chief, the Grand Wizard of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. One of the things that we've learned is that while Jim Crow may be dead, he still got some nieces and nephews that are alive and well." Well, Jim Crow was a Democrat. Duh. And one can only assume that Mr. Crow's relatives are as well. But not all Democrats are racist. Some are anti-Semites, a few are socialists, and some are old-fashioned crooks. Nancy Pelosi and a few others are merely megalomaniacs. One hardly needs heavyweight political scientists or sophisticated historians to predict what happens when this volatile admixture is combined with large quantities of special interest money and unlimited political power. You get crazy. What you do not get is reasonable compromises on important issues, and you certainly don't get good government. I like that article. I think Mr. Catron wrote a great article there. What do you think? And I got time, lots of time. Good deal. Now, the last couple days, we've been hearing about how great Kamala Harris is. But here at the American Spectator, Stephen Greenhut has something interesting to say. And he wants to know, are Democratic voters about to break bad? So, Senator Kamala Harris has announced a presidential run. But her actions as California Attorney General should raise even progressive eyebrows. Mr. Greenhut writes, "One of my favorite scenes in Breaking Bad, the hit cable series about a high school teacher, Walter White, morphing into a meth kingpin is when White's associate, Jesse Pinkman, gives him advice on choosing the right attorney. He's, quote, "Seriously, when the going gets tough, you don't want a criminal lawyer. You want a criminal lawyer." In other words, White doesn't just need a lawyer who defends criminals, but one who is a criminal himself. So the proper word emphasis matters. Now, this scene reminds me of a debate, the new debate on the political left, as U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, a Democrat from California, announced her bid Monday for the 2020 presidential nomination. Harris, who was a California Attorney General from 2011 to 2017 and San Francisco District Attorney for the prior 7 years, is trying to burnish her left-wing credentials. However, Democrats are not sure if Harris was a progressive prosecutor or just a progressive prosecutor. The term progressive prosecutor has a specific meaning as reformers, including a handful of district attorneys, push for changes in the way the state administers the criminal justice system. Some of these ideas are long overdue and embraced even by some conservatives who fear the abuse of liberties and wasteful spending inherent in the current system. Policies range from reducing sentences to, for nonviolent drug offenses to creating better reentry programs. By contrast, Harris' record shows that she was not that type of a progressive prosecutor. However, she was a progressive prosecutor in that she used her powerful public position to promote a highly partisan left-wing political agenda. She wasn't known for her concern about the misuse of government power or the rights of the downtrodden when she had the power to do something about those problems, but she did promote the causes of liberal interest groups such as Planned Parenthood and California's public employee unions. We should examine the record as she attempts to remake herself in a reformist light. For instance, she championed a bill, co-sponsored by Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, that would reform a cash bail system that allows wealthy people accused of crimes to await trial at home while poor people languish in jail or accept unfavorable plea deals so they can go home. At her recent campaign book, The Truths We Hold, is a rather clear attempt to preemptively defend her record on criminal justice, which has emerged as important issues, especially on the left flank of the Democratic Party, wrote C.J. Cherimella. Reasons, Criminal Justice Reporter. The book includes many passages pointing to the outsized power of prosecutors and makes it sound as if she were on the front lines battling against misconduct and abuse. Yes, Cherimella added, the book glosses over numerous instances where her office defended prosecutorial misconduct. These include a Kern County case where her office appealed a court's decision to drop charges after a prosecutor was accused of falsifying an interview transcript to add an incriminating confession. In another case, her office challenged the release of a man who had been exonerated by the Innocence Project and had his conviction overturned, he wrote. He offers a variety of other troubling examples. So does law professor Laura Basilton, who opined in the New York Times. Time after time, when progressives urged her to embrace criminal justice reforms as a district attorney and then the state's attorney general, Ms. Harris opposed them or stayed silent. Most troubling, Ms. Harris fought tooth and nail to uphold wrongful convictions that had been secured through official misconduct that included evidence tampering, false testimony, and the suppression of crucial information by prosecutors. Instead of serving as a champion of justice, she seemed unwilling to upset powerful public safety unions. In an appalling Orange County scandal involving the district attorney's use of jailhouse snitches, something that delayed justice in the country's worst mass murder case and led to reduced charges in several other criminal cases, Harris's office sided with the DA's office after a judge removed it from the case. She promised to open an investigation into the worst alleged abuses by police and prosecutors, but after 3 years, nothing came of it. Now, Harris might still excite Democrats with her embrace of a wide-ranging progressive political agenda. She now is championing a grab bag of programs, including the $3 trillion tax increase. $3 trillion. For the love of God. I can't. That's what it says, my friends. She wants Medicare for all and tax credits for renters, but none of that is substantially different from what others will propose on the Democratic campaign trail. Nevertheless, she really did stand out in her willingness to flex her prosecutorial power on behalf of that agenda. Now, in 2012, Harris, as Attorney General, was responsible for writing a title and summary for a statewide ballot initiative that would have reformed the state's overburdened pension system. Those are the only explanations that most voters read. Instead of acting impartially, she wrote descriptions that even the liberal Sacramento Bee said were like talking points taken straight from the public employee union boss's campaign handbook. By making it sound as if it would cut pensions for teachers and peace officers, Harris doomed an initiative opposed by her union allies. Progressives were thrilled. They were thrilled, too, when in 2014 her office, which collects registration information from nonprofit groups operating in California, demanded that a conservative foundation provide its private donor list. She claimed the list would be confidential, but who would willingly hand over that information? The group, the Americans for Prosperity Foundation, filed a lawsuit that challenged this on First Amendment grounds. Unfortunately, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the state. So after the Center for Medical Progress in 2015 released undercover videos of top Planned Parenthood executives allegedly discussing the fees and marketability of body parts of aborted fetuses, the Attorney General did not investigate the group's California operations. Instead, Harris agreed with demands by Democratic legislators to investigate the undercover videographers for potentially violating California's Invasion of Privacy Act, and her successor filed 15 felony charges against the videographer, which is sure to chill undercover journalism. As I wrote at the time, her tenure as Attorney General already is an instructive lesson in what happens when a partisan takes over an important constitutional office and seems to put the demands of her political supporters above any pretense of even-handed justice. In that sense, then, Harris is the opposite of a progressive prosecutor, even though she is one of the most progressive prosecutors in state history in the other sense of the word. The reality is she champions the raw exertion of government power, which might make her the odds-on favorite in the party of big government. Interesting. I think it's an interesting take on Kamala Harris. Yeah, I know. She could, you know, and I believe, if we remember right, she was also breaking bad on Brett Kavanaugh. Yes. Ooh, I got a little bit of time here. Yeah, got about 7 minutes. You know what we haven't done? I'll tell you what we haven't done. Where is it? To Breitbart.com. It's the social justice report. What else we have here? It gets crazier yet. It does. Well, this is the social justice people. So with that said, let's get on with it, shall we? Yes, here we go. It's time for the social justice, see what they've been up to. Well, Melissa Harris Perry says academic freedom is dead at Wake Forest University. Let's see. There's an elderly Swede on trial for calling a Somali migrants lazy online. Yeah, that's your European Union for you. Coca-Cola's to air diversity and inclusion Super Bowl ad before the national anthem. Coca-Cola will not air an ad during the Super Bowl this year, opting instead to air an ad just before game coverage starts. There's an exclusive. Donald Trump Jr., he says Covington Catholic hoax shows who the real target of fake news truly is. He says, I have a message for the Covington kids and every other young Trump supporter across the country. Wear your Make America Great Again hats with pride, kids. The president will always stand with the American people against the fake news. It's the only way we and the truth will win. Ricky Gervais, he's a big lefty. Well, he's ripping the left. He says, if I defend freedom of speech, I'm suddenly an alt-right Nazi. British comedian and actor Ricky Gervais tore into the left Wednesday asking why he's suddenly condemned as an alt-right Nazi for defending free speech. American University multicultural room deemed too inclusive. So students at American University are complaining that a recently opened multicultural center is too inclusive. So let me get this straight. It's so inclusive that it's too much inclusiveness. So we want to get rid of it. So we want some people, but not everybody. Never mind. This is what the craziness gets you. It is. It's nutty as it can be. Let's see what else we have here. The University of Texas student says gyms are too masculine, proposes women-only gym. A columnist for the University of Texas at Austin, by the way, in case you don't know, Austin, Texas is a red hot, no, seriously, how should I put it? A red hot pit for liberals. They just love Austin. They've turned that place into a real crap hole. But anyways, the University of Texas Austin proposed the idea of a women-only gym center due to the overwhelming masculine nature of co-ed gyms. Let me guess. Then they're going to find, well, there's, oh, we got too many women here. We don't like that. Yeah, that'll probably fail. Meanwhile, we have Kate Hudson raising her daughter genderless. We don't know what she's going to identify as. Actress Kate Hudson says she is raising her daughter to be genderless and that she intends to let the child choose her gender. Let me think here. She's a female, a daughter, so makes her a female. Let's look at this way. Kate Hudson has referred to her as her daughter, so Kate Hudson's already told everyone that it's a female, a daughter. How lazy can you get as a parent? Hayward, Trump fights the Covington culture war after passive conservatives surrender, and this did happen. President Trump spoke out Tuesday against the media assault on the Covington Catholic High School students, leaping into a culture war melee after many establishment conservatives either backed away from the fight or actively supported the false narrative pushed by the left-wing media. Yeah, that's entirely true. Well, I got about a minute left. Yeah, about a minute and a half. Okay. Report. Gawker 2.0's two remaining full-time writers have quit. Gawker 2.0 reportedly lost its only two full-time writers on Wednesday after both of them quit as a sign of protest against the newly hired editorial director, Carson Griffith. Report. Congress launches investigation into the original Covington hate hoax tweet. Well, nothing will come of that. We all know that. Hell, they came in. Never mind. You know what I'm going to say. I got, what, about a minute left? Okay. I got a couple more here I could probably throw in there. Dartmouth professor argues in favor of doxing Covington Catholic students. That all says it all there. Free speech social network Gab, which CRN is on there, secures payment processor following financial blacklisting. All right. Let's see. Half. Is that it? Is that about it? It's really there? Yeah. All right. Hey, $2 a month. That's what I need. $2 a month from every listener, the subscribers on the CRN Facebook page. $2 a month. That's all I'm asking. $2 a month. Go to podbean.com. Podbean.com. You can see one says, donate, please do. $2 a month, that's what I'm asking, $2 a month. I'm John Jeffers here at the Jeffers Brief, saying thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Have a good one.